Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last night was a big night in this long, fiery election season. A historic moment in American politics as Hillary Clinton claimed the Democratic Party nomination.
Thanks to you, we've reached a milestone. First time in our nation's history that a woman will be a major party's nominee.
Bernie Sanders says he'll fight on to Philadelphia. Donald Trump says he'll come after Clinton with a massive attack. Clinton's already there, charging he's temperamentally unfit for the presidency. But for one night, she turned to history. This hour On Point, Hillary Clinton claims the nomination. We'll look at Sanders now, Trump now, and the race for the White House now. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did you hear her speech? And what do you see coming? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Kelly Goff, columnist for The Daily Beast and host of Political Party with Kelly Goff on NPR affiliate WNYC. Kelly, great to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining.
Great to be here, Tom.
From Washington, Byron York joins us, chief political correspondent for The Washington Examiner, Fox News contributor. Byron, great to have you with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
And from Washington, Karen Tumulty, national political reporter for The Washington Post, rounds off our team today. Karen, great to have you as well.
Great to be here.
Bernie Sanders not going down without a fight. Here he was last night on the whole scene. He's going to the convention in Philadelphia at the end of July, he says.
We are going to fight hard to win the primary in Washington, D.C. And then we take our fight for social, economic, racial and environmental justice to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
The Sanders message and the Trump message, the country is a mess and Hillary Clinton won't fix it.
We're broke. We owe $19 trillion, going quickly to $21 trillion. Our infrastructure is a disaster. Our schools are failing. Crime is rising. People are scared. The last thing we need is Hillary Clinton in the White House or an extension of the Obama disaster.
And here we go. Karen Tumulty, Hillary Clinton claimed the nomination last night. Is it hers?
Yeah, it's hers. It's basically been hers since the end of March. And she, you know, her campaign was sort of in this position for the last few weeks of having to sort of forge ahead with the primary contest, even though it was, you know, all but numerically impossible for Bernie Sanders to catch up to her delegate lead, and begin preparing for the general election contest, which ended sort of more abruptly and earlier than they had anticipated.
So hers, Kelly Goff, if it's hers, what is Bernie Sanders up to now?
I think he's up to enjoying the perks of being a really prominent politician, which he will cease to be once he drops out of the election, you know, ask people like Jeb Bush. So I think he's enjoying, you know, that ride for as long as he possibly can. I don't know that that benefits his legacy in the long term, but, you know, it's a free country and he's allowed to hang in there if he would like.
Byron York, if it's Clinton versus Trump, if that's what it is, how do you see that playing out?
Well, that is what it is. I just don't think there's anything any doubt about that. I think the Democratic Party's big task right now is to talk Bernie down out of the tree, because Karen's exactly right about that. And the question I have about the upcoming general election is, obviously, there's going to be lots of drama. There's going to be a lot of noise. There's going to be all this stuff. But in the end, will it end up electorally kind of like 2012 did? In other words, look at all the states Mitt Romney won in 2012 for 206 electoral votes. Look at all the states Barack Obama won in 2012 for 332 electoral votes and see how many are going to be different. It might not be all that different in the end.
Hillary Clinton last night saying that when Donald Trump says, let's make America great again, what he's talking about, she said, is taking the country backwards.
When he says, let's make America great again, that is code for let's take America backwards. Back to a time when opportunity and dignity were reserved for some, not all. Promising his supporters an economy he cannot recreate.
Karen Timothy, is that fair? Is that right? Is that effective?
Well, first of all, one of my favorite little pieces of trivia about this election is that Donald Trump so understood what he thought this election was going to be about from his perspective that he actually filed paperwork to trademark the phrase Make America Great Again 6 days after the 2012 election, 6 days after Mitt Romney lost. I think he is sort of appealing to people who feel like something has been lost in this country, whether it's, you know, whether it's their cultural values or their economic future or whatever. And so in that sense, she's right. And the other thing that I find interesting about her rhetoric, especially in the last week or so, is that she seems to be sort of reclaiming American exceptionalism for the Democrats, because kind of inherent in Trump's Make America Great Again slogan is this idea that this is a country on decline.
I mean, he says that again and again. But what about her characterization? I mean, she said this is the racist dog whistle is what she said, or the white privilege dog whistle. And she claimed we can't go back. He wants to bring back an economy that's just gone. Is that a fair assessment, Karen?
Yeah. I mean, I think that he does insist that he can bring back the coal mining industry, that he can bring back manufacturing jobs. You know, that's a pretty heavy lift in the, you know, in the sort of state of the world economy.
Byron, you're sorry, Kelly, jump in.
Well, I was going to say, I think you really nailed it, Tom, when you said bringing up racist dog whistles, because I actually admire Clinton's discipline, because when she kept saying, here's what he's talking about, taking our country back in terms of economically, she also knows that there are a lot of people of color who heard the underlying message, which is when they hear him say, let's make America great again, what a lot of us are hearing is, let's make America white again, let's make America less brown again. That's something that comes up repeatedly when you talk to voters of color, is that there's this sense that there's something wrong with what's happening to our country. And a big part of what's happening in our country is it's becoming a predominantly brown country. A couple of years ago, I remember I interviewed Gordon Baum twice, actually, before he passed away. And he was the head of the Conservative Citizens Council, which is sort of known as the modern day version of the white collar Klan, as they used to call it, which is, you know, people who support white separatism, but in a much classier suit and tie sort of way. That's the group that Trent Lott got in trouble for speaking at a decade or so ago. And one of the things that kept coming up with people like Gordon Baum is their concern about how brown our country was becoming. He actually had a conversation with me about the concern that not enough educated white women were having babies and, you know, that they're being outbred by brown people. This is sort of the nightmare of people like that come to fruition. So when you hear Donald Trump talk about how our country is on a decline, it's hard for the rest of us not to see that as not just speaking economically, but demographically, particularly when you look at the fact that mixed race families are the fastest growing demographic in the nation. So we're not only getting browner, but we're actually infiltrating white families, so to speak.
That's one way to look at it.
For those who don't know.
That's one way to look at it. Byron, I want to bring that to you, but first let's hear a little bit of Hillary going the other way last night. We'll hear Donald Trump as well, but here she was with her big themes.
We all believe that America succeeds when more people share in our prosperity, when more people have a voice in our political system, when more people can contribute to their communities. We believe that cooperation is better than conflict, unity is better than division, empowerment is better than resentment, and bridges are better than walls.
Byron York, Donald Trump has picked up very effectively on disillusionment with American politics, on anger at what's going on in this country economically. He was called out by Paul Ryan this week for racist remarks. But by your lights, is Clinton right? Is she fair when he says, when she says he wants to take us backward and we can't go back economically?
Well, a couple of things. On Trump's current Judge Curiel problems aside, Democrats have been accusing Republicans of racial insensitivity, if not outright racism, for quite a long time. And they've been accusing Republicans of wanting to turn back the clock for quite a long time as well.
But this is Paul Ryan, Republican Speaker of the House, saying this is racist, Mr. Trump.
Yeah, but you just played Hillary Clinton. But beyond this whole idea that Trump represents a politics of nostalgia and a politics of anger, I think it will be interesting to see how actual issues might play out in this election, because Trump has blown up Republican orthodoxy in some really important areas like trade, like immigration,
against
like
free trade, or
like entitlements, like foreign entanglements. And these would, I think, in absent some other factors, probably appeal to independent voters. And I think it's going to be, you know, Karen wrote in her very good piece about the Clinton campaign that at various times the Clinton campaign has been somewhat worried about how to deal with Trump. I think now they see him possibly self-destructing with the help of some of his Republicans as well. But the question is how to deal with a Republican candidate who is so un-Republican on a number of issues that really are quite important.
When those begin to be unpacked in the head-to-head, if it's Hillary versus Trump, do you see his economic moves as looking realistic in the eyes of the American public or ending up looking nostalgic, Byron? Could he pull it off? Does he have a program in there that you think people say, yes, we can do that? Or does it look, will it look unachievable as Hillary would like to paint it last night?
Well, it's on trade. It's not all. That's the only area I think that he really is somewhat similar to Bernie Sanders. On immigration, you know, we'll have to see how that one plays out. On entitlements, it's a very much a Democratic sort of plan. In other words, we're not going to touch your Social Security.
Yeah. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton's big night, the first woman to claim a major party nomination. We're looking at Sanders now, Trump now, and the race now for the White House. You can join us. Did you hear the speech last night? What did you make of Hillary Clinton's message? Did you feel the tug of history, the first woman ever to stand in that position? What about Bernie now? What should he do? What should he say? What about Donald Trump? How strong does he look to you heading now toward the conventions and November? Kelly Goff is with us from Political Party with Kelly Goff on WNYC. Byron York is here from the Washington Examiner. Karen Tumulty, national political reporter for the Washington Post. Hillary Clinton reaching out last night to the Sanders campaign, his people, very generous in her tone last night.
And let there be no mistake, Senator Sanders, his campaign, and the vigorous debate that we've had about how to raise incomes, reduce inequality, increase upward mobility have been very good for the Democratic Party and for America.
The Bernie Sanders saying, look, I see the numbers, but I'm still in this to fight for every inch.
I am pretty good in arithmetic, and I know that the fight in front of us is a very, very steep fight. But we will continue to fight for every vote and every delegate we can get.
And Donald Trump showing a little glint of steel. He promises a big attack on the Clintons next week, but there was just a taste, a touch of it last night at his golf club in New York's wealthy Westchester County. He said the Clintons, Hillary and Bill, have made a lot of money too, but off the backs, he said, of the American people.
The Clintons have turned the politics of personal enrichment into an art form for themselves. They've made hundreds of millions of dollars selling access, selling favors, selling government contracts, and I mean hundreds of millions of dollars.
Donald Trump last night, I want to come back to the Trump attacks and where that may go. Hillary Clinton with a little bit of her temperamentally attack again there last night. But Karen, help us think through how this works with Bernie Sanders now. He's meeting with President Obama. They've talked. Washington, D.C. will have its primary next week. If this is going to get unwound and resolved, how does that happen? Or does he try and hold the pose all the way to Philadelphia, still fighting for delegates, still asking for what are the potential paths for resolution here that you see, Karen?
Well, first of all, let's remind ourselves that, you know, bitterness at the end of a primary season and divisiveness is not unusual. And as much as the Clinton people try to portray 2008 as a time
sunshine
when, you know,
and light.
That wasn't what that summer looked like, let me tell you. The question is, you know, yes, it's true. I mean, last night was the 8-year anniversary of when Hillary Clinton herself had stepped aside, had given up her race. But she didn't have the kind of money, the kind of enthusiasm at the end that Bernie Sanders did. And one question is what they can offer him, because he, you know, he doesn't need what losers usually need, which is help paying off their campaign debts. I think that, you know, he's got to decide what he wants this movement that he has created to be in the future. And also, is there anything tangible that he can get out of the party?
Tom?
Kelly, what might he want tangibly out of the party?
Well, so here's the thing, is that people obviously draw comparisons a lot to 2008. And, you know, why should Sanders drop out when, you know, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama had a very lengthy primary and it turned out just fine? What a lot of people, though, seem to forget is that Barack Obama began his candidacy as a much less damaged public figure with much higher favorables than Hillary Clinton has. Right.
Yeah.
So an argument, a very strong argument could be made that Hillary Clinton having a very tough primary with Barack Obama in 2008 actually helped make an unknown, if not weak, candidate stronger, whereas the same argument could not be made this time around. You essentially had someone who was already going to be a tough sell, who the longer this primary is dragged out, or the presumption of a primary, since it's not, she's claimed the nomination at this point, actually becomes even more damaged. That's why I think the 2008 comparisons are not really completely, you know, analogous. I think that for Sanders, in terms of what he wants, you know, he's not, to Karen's point, someone who can be bought with money, right? Like, there's going to be a great cushy job. We all know that that's not
his thing.
What he's looking for. What he does, though, however, I think is a compelling point, which my guess is the White House is making to him, is that this is really about his legacy. This is really about his place in history. This is not a man who, despite the momentum he has done particularly well with racial minorities of any kind. The very people who he claims his candidacy is focused on, the working class, the working poor, people of color, those are not the people who actually look particularly fondly upon his candidacy. So the question becomes, does he want to be remembered as the person who pushed issues forward for those people, force the Clinton campaign to focus on those people as she pursues the nomination in the general election? Or does he want to be remembered as the really angry guy, another white male who is seen as standing in the way of progress simply out of narcissism? Which is the direction he's headed should he continue this fight really aggressively for another couple months?
Byron,
please. Well, I think that we just have to say, I mean, Bernie Sanders seems to be in a bit of la-la land right now. He is, after these contests that we just had, he's 380 pledged delegates behind Hillary Clinton. That is a huge number in a proportional system. There's one contest left. It's the District of Columbia with 20 delegates at stake. And his scenario, such as it was that somehow going to the convention, all of the superdelegates would decide that they don't want to be with the person who is ahead by 380 points and delegates, and instead jump to the guy who's in second place. And it's all totally implausible.
Let me ask you this. How much do you think that he has actually pushed Hillary's positions on the issues, Byron? And at this point, in the weeks that he may stay in, how much damage could he do?
Well, I think that rhetorically she certainly sort of moved toward him. You know, when he was doing the free college thing, she tried to come up with some of her own ideas. She's tried to do more on economic inequality. But I think as far as what he gets, I mean, the big banks aren't going to be broken up. There's not going to be free public college for everybody. The millionaires and billionaires are not going to be taxed at the level that he would want to do it. This stuff is just not going going to happen. So I think I mentioned earlier the task is to talk him down from the tree. The task is actually to give him some sense of respect. But he's not going to get a lot of what he wanted because a lot more Democrats voted for the other candidate.
Hillary Clinton saying last night that there was something big happening just in her nomination. She said she wished her mother, who would have turned 97 last weekend, could have seen her daughter become the Democratic Party nominee. Said a glass ceiling was being broken for women last night, and there are more ceilings for all, she said, to break in the future.
Yes, there are still ceilings to break for women and men, for all of us. But don't let anyone tell you that great things can't happen in America. Barriers can come down. Justice and equality can win.
Kelly Goff, Byron York, Karen Tumulty, please stand by. Lots of callers here. Matthew in Brighton, Massachusetts. Matthew, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thank you.
What do you see?
Well, you know, I see Hillary clinching the nomination as a big win for a lot of people, not just women, but for people who, agree with, say, foreign companies like Uranium One donating millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation, people that want big business, in bed with politicians, specifically Democratic politicians.
So you're a Bernie guy, Matthew?
Good. No, I'm definitely voting for Trump. He's the biggest outsider we have.
A Trump guy.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling. Barbara, York, South Carolina. Barbara, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that people are saying they excuse Trump's comments because he's just saying what he thinks. Well, I'm glad he's saying what he thinks because he thinks as a racist and a woman hater and as a Republican. For years since I've been voting, I am voting Democrat this year because Donald Trump does not think the way I think.
Who have you voted for in previous presidential elections, Barbara?
I have voted Republican since I have been able to vote, and Reagan was the first person I voted for.
And what about, if you and other Republicans did that, if that means putting a Democrat, putting Hillary Clinton in the White House, how do you square that with your party background?
I cannot vote for a racist, woman-hating, down-on-American person. I don't care what party they're on. They're on the party I've been on all these years. He is totally against everything I'm for. And I have family members and other Republicans who think the same way. They cannot look themselves in the mirror after Election Day and say, I voted for Donald Trump. He's a woman hater. He's a racist. He's down on America. He doesn't stand for what we stand for.
Barbara, we've got it. He says, make America great again. Many people have responded to that. This week, of course, there was him calling the judge saying he's a Mexican. He couldn't give him a fair trial. And House Speaker Paul Ryan went off on that Republican, of course. Here was Speaker Ryan.
Claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment. I think that should be absolutely disavowed. It's absolutely unacceptable.
On the other hand, Byron, Paul Ryan went right on to say, do I believe Hillary Clinton's the answer? No, I do not. He's saying we have more common ground on policy issues with Trump than with Hillary. You hear Barbara in South Carolina. How much of the party do you think may just either literally go the other way to Clinton, let's say, or just sit it out, Byron?
Well, that is the dilemma that a lot of Republican office holders have now. And the question is Trump going to make it harder for them all the way to November, or is he going to make it a little easier on them than it has been in the last couple of days? Unclear. For every Republican vote that Trump loses in November, and we certainly have one on the line right now, he's going to have to get another vote and still some more from somewhere else, which is a very, very tough task. Just one more note. The first call, Matthew, talking about Clinton and uranium. Maybe he was in on a Trump conference call or something, because I do think we're going to see there was the book called Clinton Cash that made a bit of a splash a while back. I think we're going to see Trump fashioning a lot of attacks based on Clinton Foundation business practices, and I think that starts next week, and Trump will launch his most concerted and perhaps even organized attack on Clinton on that basis.
Please, Kelly.
Well, I was just going to jump in and say that I have a bit of a contrarian take, if you don't mind, on Barbara, whose comment I really appreciated. I actually wrote for the Daily Beast a column about how I think that in the long run, Donald Trump will actually be a really great thing for the GOP. And I said that not in any tongue-in-cheek fashion. I genuinely mean that. And the reason I mean that is because I'm an African-American woman in my 30s. And in my first book, Party Crashing, in my polling research, I found that actually younger African-Americans represent one of the fastest growing demographics of registered independents in the country. I'm a registered independent myself. And the difference between really myself and my parents who grew up in the segregated South is they have a stereotype of who all Republicans are, right? Which is bad boogeymen like Strom Thurmond, who vote, you know, along a racist perspective that drives them. And, you know, I think seeing people like Mitt Romney, seeing people like the Bushes, seeing people like Paul Ryan, seeing people like Barbara denounce Donald Trump's racism with such venom actually gives the party a real opportunity to rebuild after this election
cycle.
Even
though many of those who have denounced or turned their back on him this week are actually also say they're voting for him, like Paul Ryan.
Well, right now. I mean, because remember, Senator Kirk in Illinois was also going to vote for him until he said something really stupid and offensive. And I'm going to go on a limb here and say this is not the last stupid and offensive comment we've heard from Donald Trump this election cycle. So, you know, I think this is going to be a real interesting, in a good way. I actually think it's great that the Republican Party, who for the last 8 years have often said so many defenders of the president throw around the R word. They call everyone racist, even when there's not really a racist comment. This is one of the first weeks where I heard Republicans in mass say, wait a minute, that's racist. Like that is so racist, we cannot abide it and we're going to denounce it. And I think the more we start hearing that and force the GOP into that conversation, the better it is for them in the long run, and the better it is for African Americans. I actually have always said I want to live through a presidential election where I am treated as a swing voter by both parties, not as someone who is simply taken for granted and assumed to be voting Democratic. I want to have that experience. I've never had it in my lifetime.
But to sort all that out in a presidential election with so much on the line, pretty wild. I mean, Donald Trump last night fairly well acknowledging he'd made a lot of Republicans jittery with loose words. And now here he was last night reading from a teleprompter, measured, scripted, promised he'd be more presidential. Do the GOP proud.
You've given me the honor to lead the Republican Party to victory this fall. Yeah. We're going to do it. We're going to do it, folks. We're going to do it. I understand the responsibility of carrying the mantle, and I will never, ever let you down. Too much work, too many people, blood, sweat, and tears. Never going to let you down.
Donald Trump, maybe he's listening. We had Mitch McConnell on this show last week, and he said he'd been with Trump at an NRA conference in Louisville and said to him, well, he said he wished he'd use a script more often. Here was McConnell then talking about Trump. Maybe we saw the result last night.
Said, hey, Donald, have you got a script? And he pulled it out of his pocket. I said, are you going to use it? Mm-hmm. And he said, I hate scripts. He said, they're boring. And I said, put me down in favor of boring. I think you need to use a script more often.
Mitch McConnell here with On Point last week. Jerry in Owensboro, Kentucky. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to make one point. I did vote for Bernie, and I don't know if I'm going to be I'll probably write him in if he stays all the way. I might even go over and vote for Trump. I hear the people saying about Trump is a racist. I just want to make the point. You had a caller, Jeff, on there a few weeks ago making the point that, you know, in the 70s, a black man could get a job in a factory, move up, buy a house. That was unheard of back then. Mm. Nowadays, you have people of all color, all races, that can't move up. We are being held in the same jobs or not lower-paying jobs. We're not buying houses. We're paying high rent. And that's just one point I want to make. And politicians do a lot of, they say and do a lot of crazy things. We have one that took a picture of his private and, you know, sent him through over a text message or something to another woman. So I mean, and he does not read from a script. And that's what a lot of us like about him. And I don't agree with everything he does, but I can't see myself voting for Hillary Clinton.
Jerry, I really appreciate your call. Karen Tumbley, there you have it. What a year. Barbara in South Carolina, a lifelong Republican, maybe ready to vote for Hillary. Bernie, I mean, here we got Jerry voted for Bernie, and now he's looking to Trump, Karen?
Well, and this is the what you hear from a lot of Trump supporters. On the one hand, they say we're supporting him because he says what he thinks. On the other, when you ask about a specific comment, oh, he didn't really mean that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Hillary Clinton's big night last night, claiming the Democratic nomination with her wins in California and more yesterday. Bernie Sanders says he will fight on. Donald Trump says he will come down on Clinton, on the Clintons, like a ton of bricks as early as early next week. Byron York is with us from the Washington Examiner, chief political correspondent there. Karen Tumulty is here, national political reporter for the Washington Post. Kelly Goff from Political Party with Kelly Goff on WNYC. You can join us as well. What should Bernie do now? What about Trump? How did Hillary sound to you last night? And which message has the power this year? Hillary's call for unity, Trump's call to blow it all up, turn over the tables. Hillary, yes, she's watching. She was in Brooklyn last night. She went right at Donald Trump on the issues that have been causing him trouble through the campaign on the goes-too-far side.
When Donald Trump says a distinguished judge born in Indiana can't do his job because of his Mexican heritage, or he mocks a reporter with disabilities, or calls women pigs, it goes against everything we stand for.
But if you think for a minute that Hillary Clinton will be the only one calling out her opponent here, think again. Here's a new anti-Clinton ad that started airing last weekend called Hillary Clinton, More of the Same. It was put out by a super PAC called Rebuilding America Now, financed by real estate investor Thomas Barrack, a longtime friend of Mr. Trump. You'll hear Bill Clinton's voice, I guess, from comments he made back in the Lewinsky, Monica Lewinsky days, and then Hillary Clinton, just sort of a all blended together attack ad.
But I want to say one thing.
We turned over everything.
I want you to listen to me.
I did not. I did not send classified material.
Not a single time.
And I did not receive.
Never.
Any material that was marked or designated classified.
I never told anybody to lie.
I don't know how it works digitally at all. I do not.
Rebuilding America Now PAC is responsible for the content of this message.
Karen Tumulty, what do you see coming on Monday or Tuesday? Donald Trump says he'll lower the boom with his own big attack on them.
Well, he has already been doing some of the kind of reruns of the Clinton scandals of the 1990s. And the question is whether most voters are going to say, hey, you know, I already lived through this. I don't want to go back and relitigate that. And I do remember there was a strong economy going at the time, you know, or whether there are enough people to whom this will either be new information or you know, it will do enough to sort of stir people's doubts about her character, or stir their concerns about what role Bill Clinton might have in a Hillary Clinton administration. Personally, I think it's a big gamble. I just don't know that, you know, again, relitigating things that people already know a lot about are going to get you very far.
Byron, will he really relitigate? I mean, Donald Trump isn't always that meticulous, but he certainly knows how to attack, that saber attack.
Well, he's going to go over everything, not just stuff from the 1990s. And, you know, there'll be voters who were in diapers at the time of some of the Clinton scandals. But he'll go over not only that. You'll also see him hit hard on the Clinton email affair, on Benghazi, and as I mentioned before about the Clinton Foundation and this kind of vast network of Clinton financial interests as outlined in Clinton Cash. So I think he's going to kind of offer a buffet of various Clinton misdeeds, hoping that some of it will stick.
Hillary Clinton last night signaling she's ready for that. She said she talked a lot about her mother as she talked about being the first ever woman nominee, major party for president. She said she was my rock about her mother and basically said her mom prepared her for the day when she'd have to take on a Donald Trump.
My mother believed that life is about serving others. And she taught me never to back down from a bully, which it turns out was pretty good advice.
The crowd apparently sure heard Trump right there. Jose is calling from Marietta, Georgia. Jose, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
From the party that gave us the Have You No Shame, Joe McCarthy, who had American and Frenzy looking under every rock and every and in every closet for commies, and then 50 years later has us wage a $2 trillion war over phantom weapons of mass destruction. We now have the Donald, the epitome of everything phony and vacuous and one-dimensional. It's unbelievable. Wait till the debates come up. He'll have one debate with Hillary, and he'll stop because she will eviscerate him over his lack of detail about anything. Fowlery generalizations don't cut it in a real debate.
If you're right, Jose, if people really want the details in those debates, you might be right. Let's look at that. I mean, what you saw, Kelly, I was impressed last night with Hillary Clinton. There have been many of her speeches during this campaign that I didn't think were that impressive. She seemed tight and hard and not connecting. Mm-hmm. Last night, she seemed expansive and open and fairly compelling in her frame. But when she's up against Donald Trump and they're side by side at those microphones, did you hear an approach last night that will work against the Trump kind of onslaught? How do you see the rhetorical meeting, the substantive meeting of those debates playing out?
Well, Hillary Clinton is not her husband in many ways, and one of them is as a speaker, right? And she knows that that's not been her strength, but she has definitely blossomed in the last couple of weeks. And I think part of why she's blossomed is she's kind of finally found her groove, so to speak, in terms of how to go after Donald Trump. And I think that Jose is partially right, that part of it's on knowledge and qualifications, particularly when it comes to foreign policy, which is definitely not his strong suit. I actually think, though, the bigger way that we're really going to see in terms of the debates is that we have all seen that Donald Trump has a very thin skin, right? He does not like being attacked. He doesn't like being attacked on his money. He doesn't like being attacked on his hand size. He doesn't like being attacked on a lot of things. I think that what the Clinton campaign has finally figured out is that if they can get him on that debate stage to really have a meltdown and really lose it on her, it will send a message to the American public and any voters who are on the fence that this is not someone we want with their finger on the button. A lot of people forget this, but those of us who lived here in New York, when Hillary Clinton first ran for the Senate in 2000, she had a debate against Congressman Rick Lazio, who's a very affable, young, likable Republican candidate. But he had a moment in the debate where he approached her in what was seen as a somewhat aggressive manner, right? Mm-hmm. He physically approached her, and he didn't do anything except physically approach her. But the moment really came to define his candidacy, and he lost women voters in droves. So he is much calmer than a Donald Trump. And I think that they know that. They anticipate that. The more debates they can get him in, the better for them.
Except the key thing that they have figured out, and they've only figured this out recently, really, is sort of how to do this. I was in Brooklyn on Monday, and the people in the campaign were telling me, you know, they really studied all the mistakes that the Republicans made in trying to deal with Donald Trump. And they have decided that it's not to litigate his claims. It's not to take umbrage. The way you really go after Donald Trump is to take his own words and turn them back on him. So that's what we saw her do last week in San Diego. That's what we heard her do last night. They have decided that this is what is going to work for them.
Last night she did a taste of that. She repeated her charge that he's temperamentally unfit to be commander-in-chief, listed over and over why she thinks so.
It's clear that Donald Trump doesn't believe we are stronger together. He has abused his primary opponents and their families, attacked the press for asking tough questions, denigrated Muslims and immigrants. He wants to win by stoking fear and rubbing salt in wounds, and reminding us daily just how great he is.
Clinton's way last night. Kathleen in Austin, Texas. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. You're on.
I'm just really excited today. I woke up and I heard this news, and I'm so excited that for the first time we have a woman who's going to represent the majority of us in the United States, so that we can have a voice and a visibility that we've never really had before. And I'm super excited, and I'm just kind of disappointed that that moment is just lost. It's just been like, you know, we've moved on. We're all, you know, it's like, let's have a moment where we can relish and sit in this and go, finally, That's all I'd like to say.
Kathleen, you're not the first one to say that in this hour, and we started right off saying it, and it was front and center in Hillary's presentation last night, and it is front and center as a fact. Entirely agree with you. I mean, she was turning hard to history last night, reminding us that her mom was born on the day that Congress ratified the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, talking a lot about the Seneca Falls Convention, outlining rights that American women ought to be entitled to. Hillary Clinton certainly citing history last night. Karen, as we look at that in historical terms, yes, first major party nominee, but also in the women's vote terms in this campaign, how important do you think it's going to be? It was gigantic for Barack Obama when he took it away from Hillary Clinton. How big will it be for her in this election?
Oh, I think it will be very big. And the sort of paradox of Hillary Clinton is that she has been part of our consciousness for so long now, a quarter of a century. We have seen her get knocked down, get up, keep grinding on, that sometimes it's hard to remember, you know, how much she really has pushed the envelope. And, you know, the paradox, you can see it in the polling. For the last 20 years in a row, in the Gallup poll, she has been voted the most admired woman in the world, 20 years running. And yet, at the same time, she enters this general election contest with the highest negatives any Democratic nominee has had in the history of polling. That's sort of the tension of Hillary Clinton.
Byron, what do you see when Clinton faces Trump? I mean, she was last night, I thought, sort of warm and calm and deep. Trump, you know, gets angry. Will it be a test of how angry the electorate is? You know, are you choosing that sort of calm reassurance or no, we got to bust things up here a bit?
Well, it's very hard to predict what a Clinton-Trump debate looks like. You should remember that Trump went up against a lot of Republican opponents who knew a lot more about policy than Donald Trump did.
Yep.
And Hillary Clinton said he abused his primary opponents. Another word could have been defeated his primary opponents.
True.
So the San Diego speech that Hillary Clinton mentioned, that Karen mentioned, ostensibly a foreign policy piece, really an attack on Trump, was very effective in using Trump's words. But you know, Trump's going to have a lot of Hillary Clinton stuff. So is it going to be some sort of fight where everybody's eventually turned off in the end? Does Hillary Clinton achieve this kind of magic goal of getting under Trump's skin and having him blow up in some epic sort of way? I mean, that's why we're going to be watching.
David in Iowa City. David, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I just wanted to make one comment regarding the Donald Trump Judge Curiel discussion, and it seems to me that that case must be quite worrisome to Donald Trump, because what I see him doing in his characterization of the judge is trying to limit that judge to delivering a decision in Trump's favor. In other words, to say, if you find against me, you're just exercising your discretion as a Hispanic judge against me. So it seems
trying to intimidate him or work the ref here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just part of the bullying profile that I think is part of who Donald Trump is.
Hillary Clinton, quick to say bully last night. I mean, Kelly, do you think he's got that much on the line in that case? Why else would he go after the guy in this way? I mean, he's no fool. He had to know that he would get pushback. Maybe not how much pushback, but pushback.
Well, the answer is yes, he does have that much on the line, because I have long said that, you know, people joke that there is absolutely nothing that Donald Trump could say that would cost him this election. The raunchier, crasser, louder, more obnoxious he is, the more his base loves him. The one thing he can say that or be seen as is someone who takes advantage of the working class, right? And so just as he's launching these attacks on Clinton's so-called cash problem, he faces the same problem, particularly if he gets a bad ruling on this case with Trump University. I think that's where the fear is. But look, the great advantage that Donald Trump has this election cycle is the same one that Hillary Clinton has, which is high name recognition, being a well-known entity. The greatest disadvantage that Donald Trump has is the same one Hillary Clinton has, which is high name recognition and being a known entity, right? I actually think that even though they say this every election cycle, mm-hmm. this election cycle, it's true. This election is about three words: turnout, turnout, turnout. President Obama was able to get more than 90% of African-American vote, but John Kerry got 88% and lost in 2004. The big difference? President Bush was able to get 44% of the Latino vote. I don't see that happening for Donald Trump. And so I think that this election is really going to boil down to which candidates are able to mobilize and spark the most passion in their bases. And I see a lot of passion being sparked by Donald Trump among minority voters.
Karen, that brings us back to Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and the remarkable performance of his campaign this year. He said, you know, they said we were a fringe and we were a lot more than a fringe. And that is true. What do you see Hillary being able to do, being willing to do, starting last night? She was conciliatory in tone, but substantially, to try and bring all those Sanders people back into her corner?
I think she is going to have to do two things. One, remind them of the stakes, remind them of what a Donald Trump presidency would look like. But she is also going to have to come up with an affirmative message that makes young people believe that she understands what it will take to make their future better, to essentially give them hope again.
Hope. But, you know, they've been schooled by Bernie for months. They want more than hope, right? They want policies. I mean, he's had things on the table.
They want to know that they're going to have a job that leads to something, that they're not going to be so crushed by their student debt that they'll never be able to afford to buy a house. She's going to have to point a way to that.
Byron, look at the numbers here for a second. Is this going to be a who knows race, or do you see it breaking in another way? Is the wise guy set saying, you know, Hillary's got it demographically, it's hers, or not clear?
Well, first of all, the thing that unites, I think, Democrats is going to be they think Trump is so horrible, they have to unite to stop him. The other thing is what's called the blue wall, which is the 242 electoral votes in states that have gone Democratic every single election for the last six. Does Hillary Clinton start out with that? She just needs 28 more to win. So structurally, any Democrat, Clinton included, is starting out with a big advantage.
Well, that's going to be it for today, but here we go. Watch out for Donald Trump next week when he delivers his Clinton attacks. A big, big moment, really, truly, in American history, as the first woman to be the nominee of a major party is right out front now, Hillary Clinton. I want to thank all three of you. Kelly Goff in New York, great to have you with us today. Byron York at the Washington Examiner. Karen Tumulty at the Washington Post. You're all great. Thank you very much for being with us. Karen, Byron, Kelly, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.